my truth. Broadcasting live from beautiful British Columbia, it's Roadkill Radio. And now, here are your hosts, Kerry Simpson and Terry O'Neill.
Hi, Kerry.
Hey, Terry, you want to volume
my okay, well, yeah, I wasn't sure it was on. I remember it had been turned off. But anyway, yes, we can hear each other. Sitting to my left, your right, is Derek Hoare, and we'll be talking to him in just a few minutes. So hang tough. We'll give him a proper introduction. Good week for you?
Busy week for me.
Yeah. What have you been up to?
Just rescuing people and doing, you know, all in a typical week, Terry. You know, the calls never stop coming into the offices now at Roadkill. Different issues. There's a lot of issues out there that people want help with. You know, I actually said today, you know, where do we get off this insanity? You know, at what point do we just say enough is going on all these different fronts, and collectively as a civil society, those of us that operate from a basis of common sense, common decency, and kindness, just say enough of this nonsense, and we are no longer going to take it.
I
am at that point.
Wow, you've been at that point for two decades. I know. It's surprising with that strong passion that you're still in one piece and haven't blown apart. But anyway,
that's a whole show in itself.
That's right. That's
How
right.
does Kerry remain
that's
in
right.
one piece?
Now, you remember last week I gave you shared with you an insight into one of the thoughts that I'd been developing about the Vancouver riot. And I said that I was in the process of writing a piece for the National Post. That piece ended up being published last Thursday. And then that generated a request for me to be on Cross Canada Checkup.
I said, you were just such demand, Terry.
It was, if you missed the Cross Canada Checkup, you can go to our website because our Ace Whiz computer guy has put that, full transcript for the recording, 10-minute interview that I had, and put really good pictures and introduction to it. So just follow all the links on our website at Roadkill Radio.
Such a talented team here at Roadkill.
It's really good, and it's way better. It's radio with pictures. I guess like we are. We're radio with pictures. That's right.
We're not really radio. We just try to keep everybody on their toes.
That's right. We have good alliterative skills anyway with Roadkill Radio.
Is that what we have?
That's what we have. Yes. That's right. So we're sort of webcasting TV. So we have a tremendous show tonight. I'm going to have a therapy moment a little later, and we'll update. It's connected to that wonderful story we had a few weeks ago about the Toronto couple that's attempting to raise their child in a genderless fashion. Remember that?
Wait a minute, Terry. Is this your way of just trying to finally push me over that edge of that two-decade maintenance I've maintained of not imploding, exploding?
You know, I'm going to do my best.
You're going to try, are you?
To really wind
well,
you up on
if,
this
if
one.
If any subject will do it.
This is one.
Almost.
Well, you're gonna go nuts on this one because there's something happening in Europe that is that's connected to this that's kind of wild.
And you found it.
Yes, it's easy enough, you know. There's something called the internet.
Detective.
That's
Terry.
Right. Towards the end of the show, we'll be updating Zabeth and Paul Baines' story, which is a child apprehension story with the unjust ramifications, but there could be some good news coming out of that.
We're moving in the right direction.
Yeah,
I am
good.
Happy to report.
That's good. The rock that we've been pushing up the top of the mountain has reached the plateau and maybe gained some momentum.
Maybe.
Good. In the middle of the show, we'll be talking to Joseph Ben-Ami. He's a conservative activist from Central Canada. He has just started, along with a group of other people, a new quarterly magazine called the Canadian Observer. And it promises to be a bold and insightful and pot-stirring exercise in journalism. We love pot-stirring here.
Actually, we do more than stir the pot.
We
actually do something
We stir the pot, we throw the spices in, and then we wait for it to...
The Roadkill special spice.
That's right. So we'll be talking to Joseph Ben-Ami about the new publication, The Canadian Observer. And, of course, throughout the course of the evening, if you'd like to communicate with us, please send us an email at roadkillradio@live.ca, roadkillradio@live.ca. But first, we'll be talking with, sitting to my left, on your right, those waiting patiently, Derek Hoare. Derek, thank you for being here tonight. Welcome to Roadkill Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Derek, yeah.
And by way of a quick introduction, this is not a happy story.
Well, this one might put me over the edge,
that's
too.
That's right. Unlike the positive things we're seeing with the Bain family, this is a recently developing story about child apprehension from the Fraser Valley of British Columbia. And Derek is here tonight to tell us about his personal story and how the Ministry of Child and Family Development, what do they call
Children
it?
And Family.
Children
but,
and Family.
But I think increasingly becoming the Ministry of Destruction is,
yeah, that's
is how
you
most
call it.
People refer
That's what I was trying to
it.
Remember. The Ministry of Destruction has...
once again struck.
Has struck once again with devastating results. And Derek, do you have the first question, Carrie, for
well,
Derek?
You know what, Derek, and thank you for being here on Roadkill Radio. One of the things that we have found over the years, and I should tell our audience, yesterday I started getting phone calls and emails, and actually there were some there already over the course of the weekend about things that were going on. This name kept coming up, Derek, yeah, you got to help Derek. I eventually found the story that everybody was referring to. It was emailed to me through several different channels as well.
Yeah, the Abbotsford News published a story on
and
June
Bravo,
24th.
Bravo
yeah.
to the Abbotsford News, because quite often the mainstream media doesn't want to grab these kinds of stories because they're told, well, there's always more to it.
Give
you
me
know?
Your wrist. You called them mainstream.
I'm sorry.
We call, it's
yeah.
downstream media here
yeah.
because they're so out of touch. They have to be downstream.
Well, and they are. But, you know, to the credit of the Abbotsford News, and I actually called their editor and I said, look, I'm getting all these requests to phone this Derek guy. Can you get him to phone me? You know? And they did. I believe they contacted
yeah,
you.
They did.
And said who this person was looking for you and
right.
might be able to help or something like that.
So the headline in the Abbotsford News is, Abbotsford dad devastated that autistic daughter is removed from home. Derek, what happened?
Well, really, I mean, the story obviously goes all the way back to when she's autistic, when she was diagnosed, or even before. But
now you have three children.
Correct.
And how many of them have autism?
My youngest two have autism, my
okay.
9 and my 10-year-old little boy. And then I have an 11-year-old who's, quote-unquote,
okay.
normal.
And you're a single father at this
Correct.
Stage? Okay.
Yeah, for
All
3 years
right.
now.
Okay, so you have custody of three children, and you're devastated because one of those children has now been removed from the home.
Correct.
What's the story with
the,
how
well,
did that come about?
She... escape from the yard. She's not known as a wanderer. She wandered a bit in 2007 and 2008. Other than that, the rest of her life, she's been pretty well a homebody. And on Sunday, the 12th, I believe, she jumped the fence from her treehouse, and she took off. Now, I went out less than a minute later to look for her, but I assumed she had gone north, and that's sort of the direction I headed. First, I searched the house and the yard, of course. She did go south, and she, I guess, went into a neighbor's house through a screen and watched some TV and listened to music and had a bath, and then Goldilocks to their house,
yeah.
and then she went next door to where they had one of those plastic wading pools and played in that on the trampoline. I had called the police after about 20 minutes because I ran down the street and back.
Now, let me stop you there. Give us a little glimpse into what a day in the life of Derek Hoare is like with having three children, right. two that are very special needs.
Okay, well, I mean, because my kids are special needs, and, I mean, they make quite a bit of mess. So from about 9 o'clock at night to midnight or so, I clean around the house, and then I stay up and do research or reading until about 3 in the morning. I get up at 6 a.m., and check out the stock markets, and I have to get the kids up at about 7:30 or 8. My daughter.
Now, all three in school?
No, my eldest son Wyatt is homeschooled.
Okay.
Now I get the kids up to get ready. They're not allowed. Ryan's not allowed on the bus anymore because of her volatile behavior.
Okay, let's talk about that because I want our audience and we won't spend too much time, but just to understand the special needs of these children. When you say she wasn't a wanderer, there's different symptoms that are attributed to autism. There's a whole spectrum.
Mine is probably almost as extremely autistic as you can get outside of the communication. Mine's verbal skills are very, I wouldn't say good because you can't converse with her. She can talk to you and you can talk to her, but you can't talk with her. And, her spelling and all of that, her academia is good, but it's Mine's behavior and emotional state is always, since she was a little infant, been very, very volatile and aggressive and angry and tantruming and feces smearing and, I mean, you hear it in the recording,
mm-hmm.
and things like this, lashing out. Now, it's taken me years to get her out of her shell, so at home now she's a happy girl and there's no tantruming or any of that anymore. It's now seen almost exclusively, it is seen exclusively outside of the home, generally in the school environment.
So in your home now, this is her world of peace and
right.
contentment.
Right.
Okay. Now, what about Lyric, your son?
He's happy-go-lucky. He's nonverbal, so he's, you know, I guess technically easier to deal with, but almost in the same regard, you have to make yourself pay attention to him because he doesn't demand a lot of attention, you know, whereas Ayn is very much in your face.
Now, in your home, I understand, and I've talked to your ex-wife, and I'm hoping that we will add her to this conversation because she's very supportive of you
right.
as the children's primary caregiver
right.
and full-time parent. But one of the things that she gave me a glimpse into is the special considerations you have to give to your home. You have to have locks on the doors.
There's locks on every door, on every window. I've had to change the locks on the windows because they solved those.
Okay, now when you say they solved those, what kind of challenges do you have with the
right.
those children of yours?
The window locks used to have a tab that you could squeeze tightly with your hands. And Lyric figured out that you could open these with pliers, so then I had to hide all the pliers. And then he figured out you could just use a fork and jam it in there and twist it. So I had to switch to Allen key window locks, so now he can't open those. Two of my three doors to leave my house are nailed shut. The front door has a lock on the inside. You need a key to get out. In the past, I've had to reverse doorknobs so that basically the burglar can walk in, but you're locked in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And these are the, you know, everything has to get put up. No pictures on the
walls. And why is that? Because children who have autism don't retain or understand danger. What is the special aspect?
They accrue knowledge like anyone else does because they're living life. So they're gaining experience and they're gaining abilities and they're gaining knowledge, but they're retaining that naivety that a 3 or 4 year old would have where they don't understand the dangers that are in the world, right? So very much, and this goes into adulthood, very much they do have to be protected, right? And we keep them safe, and we try to predict as best we can as parents of autistic kids.
Now, what do you mean by we?
Well, because, you know, there's a lot. It's like the families of autistic kids communicate with
one
another.
Oh, I see.
So
I see. Okay.
We talk to each other and we share ideas of how we do
There is a good
this.
Support system within the autistic community.
Yeah, there's a lot of ideas out there on how we do this. And a lot of, it's like you know what's coming because you've talked to people that are a little further down the road with you, right?
Yeah.
So.
Now, when Ayn escaped, and we'll use the word escape because your home sounds like a fortress, you've taken extraordinary consideration and measures to keep your children safe. And I understand even the outside area of your home has quite a high fence around it.
Well, it does, but I knew when I moved into that house that my daughter is so athletic that this girl could clear a 6-foot fence. I knew this, right? I've known that I have to keep a very close eye on her. Now, we've been there since August. Ayn's played outside so many times, and she's never escaped before. This all happened. She escaped 3 times in a 5-day period. The first time, she didn't leave the field that's on the other side of the fence. She just jumped over and was in that field. And a nice neighbor came and said, you know, your daughter's in the field next door. I gave her my phone number. And in case this happened again, she could give me a call. And then came the day that Ayn actually escaped. And Goldilocks the house and played in the pool. That was a big day. I had to call the police. And they launched a big search and rescue operation with helicopters, a fixed-wing aircraft from the United States. It was a big search, and they organized it very, very well. But, of course, it took time to implement because they didn't know where she had gone, and the tracking dog couldn't find her scent. So they did this what's called a grid point search where they block everything off. Everybody gets suited up. So Ayn did have 4 hours to play freely. And this is how long it took them to find him. And the person in the house happened to be napping at the time. They woke up to find my naked girl playing in their pool.
Okay. Well, you know, it would be almost a cute story, except
right.
for the tragic twist that has happened. I mean, this was a good story. I am the mother of 4 children. I know how fast children can disappear, whether you're in a mall, a grocery store, or in your home and in the yard. That just happens. My younger sister, I mean, one of the best stories of our family was how she took off for a 3-mile walk with our Great Dane, who was twice the size of her when she was about 3 years old. These things happen in the course of a normal family situation.
Right, and any family. It certainly happened to my family as well.
Yeah.
I might have even done it myself when I was a kid.
So.
That's right.
Not you, Terry.
So, yes, there are stories. So this happened, a happy resolution,
happy,
but the ministry gets involved that day or later?
No, Thursday. That happened on a Sunday. So She came out on Thursday. The kids were off at school.
She is a social worker?
Yeah.
Okay.
And actually, it was two of them, but I had met the social worker before, and this man, I believe, just accompanied her as sort of, you know, to come in a pair, I guess.
Now, let's stop there, because, again, for all of our audience's sake, with two autistic children, you have a lot of support systems that are available. British Columbia is very good about supporting, typically, parents.
No.
You're shaking your head no.
No.
So that's a whole other show, the challenges that are involved with parental support of autism.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Okay. But still, you, in the past, the ministry has been there. There's caseworkers. There is
correct.
Some involvement of the government already in your life.
Right. No,
not
for sure.
Protection issues, okay. But for support issues, right?
Yeah, the MCFD now oversees all the autism programming. So
the Ministry of Children and Family Development.
Right.
Okay.
And so they, you know, my meetings are forwarded to them. We have care team meetings where speech and language pathologist comes, or we'll get OT reports and child psychologists, and my family outreach worker comes, and the principal's there, and input from the TAs and myself, and we all sit down and try to figure out what we're going to do, because she's never been suited to the education system. Every experience she's had in school has generally gone poorly. She did break out of her shell a bit at her last school, but then we moved and came here.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, you're on social assistance as well.
Correct. Yeah.
So there's another level of involvement between you and the province there as well, is there?
Technically, yeah.
Okay.
Now, you are the full-time caregiver for these kids. I mean, there is no way even a two-parent family could, I think, financially deal with what the challenges are when you have two autistic children.
Well, I have to find, I budget it. I have to find a way. Certainly, it takes every penny pretty well every month, right?
Hmm.
But yeah, I budget it. But I am full-time. I mean, I get called to the school quite regularly. And when the school needs to calm her down, they call me in or they send her home to me, right? And she has two full-time TAs.
Really?
And they can't, yeah, they don't, they're not equipped and trained to deal with a daughter of my behaviors. And in the home, you know, I have, and professionals can, but it's just not.
The school environment is not conducive to what her needs are. How about Lyric, just out of curiosity?
Lyric does well in the school. I mean,
yeah.
He's happy-go-lucky.
Two very different personality types,
correct.
Then.
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so Sunday comes, big happy reunion.
Right.
Daughter found.
Throws her arms around me, right.
Okay. 4 days later, a social worker comes knocking on your door.
That's right. They came to my door and came in, and they asked me about what happened on Sunday. I told them, and they asked me what I was going to do about it, and I told them. I said, obviously, Ayn, you know, is not allowed to go outside at all without me there anymore. Now, especially now that she's found a pool and a trampoline, she's got somewhere to go,
mm-hmm.
right? And which is unfortunate, because Lyric used to love to play up on the balcony, and he'd throw strips of toilet paper, sort of tear them up and flutter them off into the wind. And, you know, he's not going to be allowed out there if she's not, because he'll just let her out from
mm-hmm.
outside, so, and I can't lock him out and lock her in. So I told her that's how it was going to have to be from there on. And then they basically said, well, that's what we wanted to talk to you about, and we have a voluntary special needs agreement for you. And I
okay.
Said,
we have a voluntary special needs agreement.
Correct, yeah.
So
very,
yeah. One would think that if it's voluntary, an agreement of some sort, you could say, no, I don't want to sign that or something. So
correct.
What happened?
Well, the voluntary,
what did this agreement
well, to be
ask
honest,
for?
I never read the voluntary okay. agreement, because as they began to tell me about the voluntary agreement, they said the first thing was Ayn would be removed from the home and placed into government care. And I said no. And they're like, will you, you want to hear the rest of it? And I'm like, no, there's no reason to. You know, there's no reason my daughter should be removed from the home. And he basically kept pushing me to...
The male social worker
to hear what was in this. And I, at this point in time...
Now, let's just stop there, because I have knowledge that there had been a previous incident where there was an issue of child protection concern raised. Was that in the voluntary? Was that talked about or mentioned?
In that agreement?
Yeah.
No, they didn't mention that.
Okay. But there had been a record
several.
Of service. Okay. Now, let's talk about the one where the social workers were involved in a previous case involving a 911 call.
Well, that one, yeah, which I assume the 911 operator thought it was the cutest thing. Wyatt had lost his kitten and asked me if he could.
Now, wait a minute. So Wyatt, your oldest son, how old was he at this time?
He was late 7, early 8.
Okay, so not that long ago, but 3 or 4 years
right.
ago. He makes a call to 911.
Right.
Okay, now I have to tell you, my third youngest child did this when we were building the house. She had learned about 911 in the school and wanted to make sure it worked. She didn't know if she should trust the teacher or not. And that's all I got was a call back from them just confirming that there was no issue. But that wasn't the situation that happened with your family. Wyatt, his kitten went missing.
His kitten went missing. He left the home to go find his kitten. He was going to walk up and down. I lived in a traffic-controlled neighborhood at the end of a cul-de-sac in Delta at this time, not in Abbotsford. And Wyatt left and was walking the streets, I guess. He went over to the 7-Eleven store, and he called 911 to ask for help finding his kitten.
Okay, so for most people would go, oh, that's a cute story, but social workers arrived at your house, or did they call you, or what happened then?
They came up. They came to my house and basically, you know, wanted to know what I was going to do about this and that my son was misusing the 911 system. I said he's not allowed to. He wasn't allowed to go to the 7-Eleven, so he already knows he's not allowed to go there because I didn't want him to cross Scott Road. He had specific boundaries he's supposed to stay in, so he did break that. He's broken it twice.
Yeah.
Well, I was there for 3 years, so I mean, pretty good. He's a good kid.
Well, I thought he was rather resourceful. If you know, when if you need help, because that what
right.
that's what children
exactly.
are
yeah.
trained to do, right? You call 911, and now oh. I know who to call okay. when I lose a cat.
Emergency.
Okay,
that's
so
right.
from the ministry's perspective. There's something on the record already about
receiving services
about a child who has gone to a 7-Eleven unaccompanied, made a 911 call. Oh boy, you know, this is raising a few warning flags. And then some years later, another child, she doesn't call the 911, ends up the whole world calls 911 to try to find the missing child. So the ministry is saying this. There's this red flag there from their point of view. They got 5 red flags in this latest case, both times involving children doing stuff away from escaping or disobeying or going places they weren't supposed to. And they start seeing, I guess, I'm just guessing here, a bit of a worrisome pattern. Is that what they explain?
Well, I guess that's, you know, that's how the theory would hold, right? Is basically they're saying that, and it wasn't just that and then nothing until this. There was other incidences between.
Okay.
Right? Never were, of course, the children removed, and always it was the same situation. Or not even, they would escape a different way, and it wasn't the same kid. One time Wyatt played in a park on a Sunday afternoon, and they were called, right?
Okay.
And another time, my kids, as a lot of autistic kids do, they always want to tear their clothes off, right? So they'd be in my yard, and they'd rip off their clothes. Someone would call in and say they were seen in my yard playing naked, right? Things like this they would get called in for.
But you would expect that the ministry would be well aware of the issues related to autism, that
right.
this is,
okay.
you know.
They were. That's why nothing happened ever before
right.
this.
Oh, okay, so now they're here last week.
Right.
They come to your place. They want you to agree to sign this voluntary order. First thing out of their mouths is that it involves the removal of Ayn from the home.
Correct.
So you basically shut down there and say no. What then? What happens?
Well, I had the laptop in front of me, coincidentally, so I immediately type in Legal Aid BC and get their number. I stand up and I start phoning them. I walked out of the room upstairs and I said to Wyatt, "They're taking Ayn." And he said, "What?" And I said, "They're taking Ayn." And I was walking back down the stairs and he followed me in there and they said, "Wyatt, you have to leave." And I'm like, "No, he can stay. He can hear this." And Wyatt sat down on the couch, and Wyatt hit record.
Hit
record
listen.
On what?
On the laptop.
Oh, okay.
And this is, you know, one of the things I've said,
by the way,
is, you know, with all these thousands of cases I've helped with, when social workers confront you with they're going to take your child, how does that affect a parent?
Right.
And in this case, we have the live recording. So, people, this is the recording that happened at this moment. When the full realization they were going to take your daughter, right?
Right.
Okay. Are we ready to go on it?
Would you
How
like
long
to
would
see
that process take?
Agreement that we put together?
He doesn't want to do special.
Would you like to at least look at it? You guys don't know who you're talking to. I'm an individualist who does not believe you guys have the right to come and see the kids. Kids who are loved, kids who are cared for. Okay, this is an accident that I have to deal with. I have to deal with these things. Hey, my daughter spread shit on the ceiling. Okay, on the walls. How many times have I cleaned it up? You don't know.
That's why.
Okay, she smashed her head through windows. You guys, what are you doing? She's been at the school and you're going to here already. You guys need to stop her. You can't stop her anymore. You don't know what happens to kids who go in these places. Do you want to look it up? Do you want to look it up? Type it in. Type it into Google. What happens to these little disabled kids in these facilities? Okay, because the videos are online, man. They're out there. You guys don't know what you're doing because she jumped a fence. Because my 9-year-old knows how to jump a fence and doesn't know what danger is. You're going to take her away from those who love her. You look in my eyes, okay? You look in them. Look. Okay? Yeah. You. What do you say?
Supervisor,
you wait. What's your supervisor's name?
She's
long here.
Do you have any kind of a card?
I do. Yeah. Unfortunately, this one has my dad's body. So if you have a pen.
And what time is he working
out there? For what?
Well, you're basically saying he's not going to voluntarily sign her.
Is there some volunteer? He gets pointing guns and say, you're voluntarily giving your kid up.
Okay, I agree. So you're saying these are the options. She's going to be taken either way. What time frame are we looking at?
We're in court in 7 days. So we'll be in court the next Tuesday.
Tuesday at 9:30 at the house.
That's called the presentation hearing. And if it's contested, then it just goes over to a family.
And in the meantime, she stays in the home?
Yeah.
No.
So she stays in the ministry approved hospital.
So she's, as of today?
That's not what happened, either.
No, and I'm going to ask about that, because you're told in that tape very clearly, and I'm going to come back to that tape, but she's going to be taken to a ministry approved foster home.
Right.
Is that what happened?
No.
What happened?
Well, my daughter was deemed unsuitable for the foster care system, and instead she was put into what they said was a specialized hospital for evaluation until she's stabilized. Okay, so your big concern that I heard come out of that very emotional, very moving bit of sound was that regardless of where she was going to be put, whether it was a foster home, an institution, or where she ended up in a hospital, that she wouldn't get the loving care, the devotion that she gets from you.
That's right.
The sort of devotion that led to you, you cleaning up all the messes she makes and looking after her 24 hours a day. The sort of love that you have, that commitment. Because you've seen, you've heard, you've seen, you've read reports about what happens to these sorts of kids when they get put into in the hands of the government. And you said all you got to do is look it up. Well, what are some of the things that do happen?
Well, Terry, we just had a report come down yesterday from Mary Ellen
Terpel
LaFon about a special needs girl who was left with her dead mother. This was a family that was receiving services. This is the kind of services we give, and then we neglect.
Yeah.
You know, this is... I mean, this is a damning report about what goes on for the families that are actually needing help.
This was a special needs kid that stayed with a parent.
With a parent, right?
Okay, wasn't taken away.
No.
Yeah, and it was a terrible thing.
It was a disaster.
What sort of homes or institutions do children like yours, Ayn, end up in? Typically, did they normally go to a home, or did they normally go to an institution? I mean, what was your fear here?
Well, if it was Lyric, he may end up in a foster home. If it was Ayn, she is going to end up in an institution, is where they would put her.
Now, will they sedate her or drug her? Or
well,
what?
Right now, realistically, I mean, of course, I haven't been told, but
okay,
you know, with
wait
the knowledge
a minute.
Of this,
stop, full stop. You have not been given an update about the condition of your daughter?
They haven't told me anything, where she is or how she's doing. It's day 12.
And day 12. Now, you mentioned that they're putting her in this place until she can be stabilized.
Correct.
Was she stable when she was at your home? I mean, what do they mean? And so she became unstabilized when they took her away. Did she? What was her reaction?
I have no idea. She was in the school at the time.
Oh, I see. So you never even saw that.
So you weren't even given an opportunity to explain anything to her? They took her from the school?
They took her from the school.
Wow. Okay, so no goodbyes. Did they come and get a suitcase?
No.
No?
They took nothing of hers.
So she has no toy? Did she have some favorite toys that she would have liked to have had with
toys and music?
Teddy bears and music, and she has none of that stuff?
Nothing.
I wouldn't be surprised if it takes a long time for her to be stabilized in circumstances like that.
She has autism. They're not going to stabilize her. All they're going to do is basically medicate her until she's lethargic.
And
they want to give her risperidone is what I've heard up to. Not since she was taken, but it was advised to me several months before she was taken, which I rejected.
Okay. Now,
so do you, that sort of gets me thinking about, have you had a testy relationship with this department? Do you think that they've just been looking for an excuse to sort of move in, now we can kind of take control of this child? Is this part of what's in the back of your mind? Is what's driving this? Is that testy relationship?
I don't know. I'm sure it says in my file there that I am standoffish and that I believe in our civil liberties, and I don't think that they... I never thought they had the power to move my kids. I was never afraid of them. I thought as long as my kids are loved and cared for, they're not abused, they're well-fed, they're taken care of, they're being educated in the home better than in the school, I never thought in my wildest dreams they could take a child like that away.
It would be a great surprise if they could, given the history, given what we know about situations like this, that if they could match any of those things, the care, the love, the education, the safety, all of those things that you provide. Did they say in this confrontation that that they had now concluded that you were not up to providing these things? Is that what they had concluded? Or because of the incident of her disappearing? Did they say, it's clearly you're not up to the job?
No, they tried to make it sound more sympathetic, like that's why we're here to help
you. They're rescuing you.
Right.
Oh.
Well, one would think that would be an entirely voluntary thing. And talk about Kafka-esque when they say, this is going to be, we're presenting you with a voluntary thing. But if you don't agree to it, well, we've got this mandatory thing on the other hand.
Right, this is akin to a mugger coming up to you in the alley and saying, give me your wallet or I'm going to take it, and you give it to him, and his defense in court is you voluntarily give it to him.
That's exactly what it is akin to.
That's not what voluntary means.
That's a Stalin-esque, Kafka-esque for the literary-minded. it's scary. So they come in there and they present this nanny state sort of ultimatum where it's pretending to be in your best interest, but you're saying, this is not in my best interest, it's not in my children's best interest.
Correct.
If you think it's in the best interest, well, you tell me and tell me exactly why you think it's in the best interest, right?
Now, your support system, you have daily contact, or at least pretty close to daily contact with the schools.
Yes,
was there
daily
people willing to support you?
I mean, there's lots of people that are willing to support me when I request help. I don't.
Well, what
need
about
it often,
what about the principal? She gets to see your interaction. Did you ask her for a letter of support?
Yeah, the principal was very supportive of me and couldn't believe that this happened. And me and the principal have spent many hours talking over this time. And when I asked her for a letter of support, I was told to get them. The principal informed me she'd have to talk to her supervisor at the district. The supervisor at the district told her that no, she could not give me a letter of support or correspond with me at all on this subject, and that if she did, it would be direct insubordination and she'd be subject to termination.
I know that sometimes a picture's worth 1,000 words, and I just wanted to display these pictures here. I don't know if we can really get as close to them as we need to, but there's a picture of Ayn and a picture of Derek and Ayn as well here. And this is... I was going to say, I'm not going to be melodramatic, because all you have left of her, you've got everything of hers except her herself, because
correct,
she doesn't have her little teddy bear that she's holding in this picture. That's obviously very dear to her. She wasn't able to bring that. She wasn't able to bring her Eeyore the Donkey T-shirt with her either, Winnie the Pooh character, unless she was wearing it. Who knows what sort of clothes they've given her now. A very dear, loving photograph here. It's got to break your heart.
It does.
How are the other two children taking this, the loss of their sister?
Well, I think you can see the effects sort of in both of them. Wyatt has a different level of understanding, so I think his biggest concern is probably, you know, is he next? I mean, if this can happen to her.
Oh, the fear, absolutely.
Right, and Lyric, it doesn't almost seem to affect him other than the last 5-6 nights in a row. Lyric has slept in my room. He hasn't tried to sleep in my room for years. I've crashed on the couch, and he's crashed in my bed, and he doesn't want to leave my side. So I don't know what he's thinking, but he knows something's amiss.
Now, I should tell our audience that I did contact the Minister for Children and Family Development, Mary McNeil, and I invited her on the show, and I got a very polite call back saying she wouldn't be able to make tonight. But I want everybody who watches this video or listens to this archive of this show, number one, I want you to become informed about what's really going on here in this province and across Canada, actually. The fact that they can walk into your home, a father who does above and beyond any what should be required of any parent, to be treated like this, Derek, is just the greatest example of contempt for the family, for contempt for the best interest of children. It is the most blatant example of conduct that is beyond reprehensible. Your daughter is paying the price because these people don't understand and don't get it and don't understand the family relationship and the bonding and all the rest of it that goes on with this. They have their little mandate, and they think that they are God. And you know, at some point, people, we have to get together as common sense, civil-minded, good people and say enough of this nonsense. These laws that just are across this country have got to be changed. Your family could be next. Your grandchildren could be next. The thousands of families that I've helped, this is not a new problem, Derek. This goes back, I mean, we dealt with this back in the 1980s, Terry. We saw some changes depending on the government. Well, this needs leadership. This needs constitutional amendments for protection for families in this nation so that children like I don't have to pay the price for social work stupidity.
Now, in the short term, because this is definitely a long-term goal, and it's a big project, and as
it can happen quick if there's political will, Terry.
As you suggested, we've been working on this for a couple of decades. What is exactly the timeline of what you have to do, what hoops you have to jump through? Has there been a hearing, or what exactly is going on now? There was some mention about a hearing that has to come up.
Well, there was a hearing on Tuesday, the 21st, but I received the paperwork from them literally while sitting there.
So they didn't hand you any paperwork. You didn't know the legal test you had to meet. You couldn't take advantage of the 7-day must appear in front of a judge because you didn't have any information about what their position was.
No,
and
the reality is here.
Did you have a lawyer with you?
I called Legal Aid, and I hadn't met her yet, so technically no. When I received the papers, I didn't have one. She tapped me on the shoulder while I was sitting in the courtroom and said, "Are you Derek?" And I said, "Yes." She said, "I just received this week."
Oh, well, that's the justice system.
Yeah,
so
there you go.
The 1 week before. Holy mackerel.
Yeah, well, I mean, we stood down repeatedly and looked at this over, and I told them I want to contest this.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, the reality is if you contest this, which is where I'm going to be for the next 45 days, the hearing that I will get in order to contest it will be 90 days away. Right?
So is this order? Is this order
and
for?
Then the 45-day period begins. Sorry, so it would be 135 days before the protection hearing actually.
So right now, from the ministry has Ein indefinitely, or is it at
seemingly,
this stage?
Seemingly, I mean, eventually I would get a protection hearing if I contest this presentation hearing. I have to wait to give my side of why she shouldn't be taken for they said about 90 days. And then they would, after that hearing, when they said where she gets to spend the next 45 days later, we'd have a protection hearing where the standard of evidence changes, and now they have to demonstrate what they're saying, and they can't.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone will attest that she was a well-behaved, good girl in school or in home and at school. She was this volatile creature that they're getting this perception of. That's why they believe she's hard to manage. Everyone will say I was doing very good, and that this it could set her back. I don't know how long.
Well, I'm going to call upon the minister to have a review of this case el pronto, immediately. This is your child is paying the price for a system that is just a mess and designed to create more destruction within the family, not to help the family support. I would suggest to you, Derek, that the voluntary agreement meant that she was going to be removed from your house anyway.
It was.
Yeah, they have a plan here.
That's why I said no.
Yeah, and you have no other option but to contest this, even though if the timeline seems, in the end, it's going to be a shorter amount of time.
They've given, when you look at the form, it says on there, they checked off that she was removed under Section 30 and that there was no less disruptive available measure is adequate to protect the child. Okay?
A lie. That is a lie.
Well, what they did then is at the end of the paperwork, they had to put down what less disruptive measure they considered. And in it, it says, a special needs agreement was offered to the parents, which they declined. There was no less disruptive measure sufficient to adequately protect the child. Well, the agreement itself calls for removal. So this is... You know, they're supposed to say what less disruptive measure did you do
22.
Other than removal.
That's a catch
and they say,
22.
Well, we offered to remove them. Right.
Well,
that's an absolute catch 22. That's Stalin-esque. That's right out of the sending them to the gulag. You're guilty if you're not guilty. You're guilty if you're guilty. It's right out of the middle ages, or the dark ages when to test the witch. If you burn, well, because you're not a witch. If you burn, you are, well, whatever. You know,
you're done for either way. Yeah.
So you reject the special needs agreement,
right,
which called for removal anyway. So because
correct,
you rejected it, we're going to remove it.
Right.
Remove her. Like, that is absolutely ridiculous.
Now, I would say that every judge has a duty to act in the best interest of your child. When is this due to go back before the court?
The 12th of July is when it was adjourned till, where we'll have the presentation hearing, and I presume I will have to contest it.
Okay, and that will be in Abbotsford, will it?
Correct.
Okay. And we are going to keep everybody posted again on this case as well, and I will be putting more letters off to the minister. And I think we should get the minister on this show, Terry.
Sure.
This just brings back memories of the last time we did this, and a very good minister back in the social credit days, going back way then, Norm Jacobson.
Oh, my God.
You know what the problem with Norm Jacobson was when we finally got down to the nitty-gritty about what was happening in his ministry? He could not conceptualize the evil that was taking place, the destruction and the practices. And we sat there together, and I explained the last week and the cases.
I remember that.
And the realization crept into his eyes. I watched it start to register with him. And you know what? He was a good minister. The minute he got it, he did something about it, Derek. And I'm hoping Mary McNeil is one of those ministers. I hope she's going to demonstrate some leadership here, some courage, and stand in the gap here and say, what is going on in these cases? You better have a good reason for the conduct that you've displayed in taking this little girl. That's right. What Mary McNeil needs to be asking her staff tonight. She needs to phone them tonight and get on this, is what she needs to do.
She needs to look at how Ayn was in the home, because these reports that they're getting are incredibly skewed. So if they would just look into this and do this investigation, like, so they would see.
I think we have a caller on the line. Caller, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi, who's calling?
This is Amy Van Dyke. I'm Ayn's mother.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Yes, thank you for joining us. Have you been able to listen to the show so far?
Only a little bit. Unfortunately, I'm working at the moment, so I
see.
Have time for a quick break, really.
Yeah.
I definitely wanted to call in.
Okay.
And show Derek my support.
What are your feelings about whether or not the apprehension of Ayn by the ministry was warranted or not?
Well, I certainly feel I should have been consulted if they had protective concerns, and I wasn't. And obviously, I placed the children in the care of their father because I felt like he was the best fit for them. These children have exceptional needs and really require 24-hour care, and he's in the best position to be able to provide that for them.
Amy, you raise an interesting point. You mean you weren't even contacted? There were 4 days from the incident of when Ayn went missing until the social workers showed up at Derek's home. During this time, you were not consulted or even asked for your opinion about if there was some other services or support could be given. There was no
not
exploration?
Not at all.
Was there any phone call?
Not a phone call. I was actually there for the incident when she was, when we were informed that she was going to be taken from the home. I haven't heard anything from her before since. I did speak to the supervisor, but he basically just reaffirmed the fact that she was to be taken, and there really wasn't anything that we could do.
Okay, so, so this is 12 days later, and neither one of you have been told. You haven't been given any information either, Amy, about your daughter?
Nothing. Not a word. This is the first time in the history of my motherhood that I haven't been able to find out how my children are faring.
Yeah. Well, welcome to this reality here that so many other parents, and all too many parents, have had to go through when they get sucked up into the black maw of the ministry here. One of our listeners has just sent us an email saying, you know, it's like the ministry extorts the caring parents to comply by abusing your child and threatening to make the suffering even worse. And Wayne, I think that's a good way of looking at it. It just boggles my mind when I hear about cases like this, and then when it's supposed to be the welfare of the child is supposed to be paramount in something like this, and that when the ministry takes an action like this and then doesn't, then totally cuts out the people, the person or people who know best about about how to care that for that child, who have spent years or decades caring for that child, and they certainly are the experts. And then to cut them out totally rather than working with them, to be so draconian about it, and then to leave them in the dark, I mean, it multiplies the suffering a hundredfold. I mean, it's not just...
It's abuse, Terry.
It's not just about not being good for the child. It's also about the suffering that goes along with that. We can only imagine what sort of suffering Ina is going through right now, being ripped away from her father and her siblings. And we certainly can see that the sadness, primarily the sadness, here sitting next to me. But there's anger there, and there's a sense of justice when, you know, there's no greater love than what parents have for their children. To have the ministry disrupt us and sort of sever it in this way, and not allowing the contact is a horrible thing. Amy, what more support are you planning to offer, or can you do at this stage?
Really, at this point, I'm working two jobs, and I'm trying to be as supportive as I can. I've definitely made my opinion on the matter known, both in court when we went to appear, and also on the Facebook page that's been created about this issue. You know, I put a lot of thought into this. As a mother, you don't just throw your children to the wolves. This is really a decision that was heart-wrenching and went on for months and months and months before our separation as to what would be in the best interest for our children. And I sincerely believe that he is the best choice. He has an incredible bond with all of them, and he's able to manage their behaviors and to watch the school try to struggle with a lot of the behaviors and then have to call him in to defuse situations because they feel their hands are tied. The fact that they weren't even wanting to have her in a full-time curriculum setting, not that I could even call it curriculum, because really they're not trained in autism.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's really tried the best he can to manage.
Right.
And it's been extraordinarily difficult. So if they walk into any specific incident, they really don't know the background that surrounded this or the years that have gone on to try to upgrade security and, you know, take her growing into consideration. Yeah. And
Amy, she's touched on one thing.
We have to get going because we're backed up here in our show here.
That's but, right. You know, and we'll end with this because I think this is, Amy's raised it, and I see it with this family. I mean, there's another aspect to this, too, and that's me as the taxpayer. This is a huge cost to taxpayers in British Columbia. Here, I am thankful that there is a father that's willing to take his responsibility seriously in the most difficult of circumstances. I mean, I raised four kids on my own. I cannot imagine what your day is like with having two special needs children to the degree of involving autism.
I'm very full.
You are a hero to most parents that you would do this. for the ministry to come in and cause you more challenge in your life is, this is the cruelest form of abuse that I can imagine. Your daughter's being abused. Amy's being abused. Your sons are being abused. I mean, the fear that they must be living in, and most importantly, you are being abused. This has got to end.
Most importantly, my daughter, but this is
the whole family unit. You are a unit, and this whole unit is being tortured, tormented, destroyed.
Yeah.
Enough.
Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, sir.
I do appreciate it, and good luck and Godspeed with you and your family.
Thank you.
Hope it's reunited.
And we will keep everybody posted, and we will talk soon, okay?
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much. Thanks for coming in, Derek.
Thank you for coming in, Derek.
And thank you for your willingness to speak the truth about what's going on in these situations.
Sure, yeah.
So many people get in fear and don't let people know. So bravo.
Well, let's shine the light.
Shine the light.
And connect the dots, too. You can do so on the Roadkill Radio website. We will be having links to the Facebook page. So you can also go and check on the find the Abbotsford News news story. And I believe the organization PA-PA.org is going to be featuring, it's .ca, PA-PA.ca, the parents' rights group, will be having links and information about this case as well.
Yep.
We just got an email from Amanda Penner. Thank you so much for covering this. My daughter has Down syndrome, and I find this very horrifying. Thank you, Amanda, for that comment, and I'm sure that a lot of other parents in a similar situation would find it horrifying as well.